Welcome to Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman, serial entrepreneur, author, and podcast host. Whether success for you is more money, time with your family, a healthy, well-balanced life, or freedom, I'm interviewing guests and getting you the advice to make it happen. So join me as we uncomplicate the complicated, help you define success, and give you the strategies to make it happen. Hi, and thank you for joining me today on the Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman. Joining me today is Mark Drager. Mark is a successful entrepreneur, brand and positioning expert, and host of the We Do Hard Things podcast. Thank you for joining me today, Mark.
Phil, thank you for having me.
So let's kick it off with, what does success mean to you?
I knew you were going to ask this question. I mean, how can you come on the Success Is Podcast and want to learn about success? And I appreciate you calling me a successful person or an entrepreneur. You know, honestly, when you were reading that bio, there was this little voice in the back of my head that was like, oh, if he only knew, like if he only knew all the failures, if he only knew that I've been running a business for 16 years, but only feel like five of them were the like the best years.
Yeah, it's all ruse. Don't look bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And so knowing that I'd be coming on the podcast and talking about success, I went back and I prepared. I studied for this question. And are you familiar with Earl Nightingale? Do you know that name, Earl Nightingale?
I do not.
He is this old-timey, I say old-timey guy, but he, I don't even know who he was. I think he was a radio host in like the 30s, 40s, and 50s. But he put out this recording in like the mid 50s called The Strangest Secret. I have a copy of the transcription. You can find it on YouTube. And it's actually the foundation for, from a mindset point of view, for what The Secret in the 20s, you know, in the 2000s, everybody started talking about the secret.
I do. Yep.
But his stuff is actually based on science. It's really, really simple. I'm going to get to the point here. What is success? This is how he describes it. And this is how I choose to love it. You know, who succeeds? I'm reading this now. Who succeeds? The only person who succeeds is the person who moves forward, working towards a worthy goal. And the reason I love that is a successful person isn't someone necessarily who has money or not, because we all know that there are rich people who are unhappy and there are poor people who are extremely happy. And it's not people who win all the time. It's not people where things come easy to them. It's not people who have gotten the doctorate or gotten the CEO position or launched the new company or any of those things. A success, again, a quote, a success is anyone who is pursuing deliberately a predetermined goal because that's what he or she decided to do. That is what a success is to me.
No, I love that. And I noticed you said pursuing, not achieved the goal.
Yeah.
Right. And I think,
well, how many of us achieve goals? I mean, I had, when I started my business in 2006, I had my eyes set on $1 million revenue, not collective, like annual, a million. When we get to a million, that's a real company. And I think, I mean, I started in 2006, 2008, 2009 was a big recession. I think it took me about 5 or 6 years, let's say 5 years, I think, to get to a million revenue. And did anything change? No. I mean, not really. My expenses went up in line with my revenue. My team grew, my complexity grew, the projects grew. It wasn't like I hit $1 million. Great. And then it was like, oh, if we can just do it a second time, nothing really changed. If it was like, oh, when I just don't have to deliver client work anymore. I worked so hard to pull myself out of delivery as an entrepreneur. And I did. And guess what? I went into a 3-month depression because I was like, if I'm not doing the stuff that comes naturally to me, because I worked so hard to pull myself out of delivery, what's my role? What's my job? And so often, you know, I heard a story of the guy who created Minecraft, right? The dude who created Minecraft, the big video game, who sold it to Microsoft for like $350 million, spent a year following that completely depressed.
Wow.
Because hitting the goal,
yeah,
is only a sign of achievement, but that's not what this is about, right? Because there are goals that we don't hit, that we work our asses off for, that we learn and we grow, and it's the greatest thing to ever happen to us, those unanswered prayers, the greatest thing ever. And then there's the goals that come easy, the achievements that come easy that we don't value, and then there are the achievements that come really hard, but we get there and we realize, is this it? And so it's pursuing your goals deliberately that is, I think, the greatest sign of success.
Yeah, so I'd love to hear about how you stay inspired after you've achieved success. I think we focus a lot on, you know, like, what do you do when you're struggling and you're grinding away? And for me, that's the easiest. I mean, I can motivate and drive myself when my back's against the wall and I have no choice to. But it's kind of a different level when you've reached that success, you've hit that goal, and you got to keep it going, right? And it's somebody falling into depression. What do you do at that point?
Yeah. So there's a few. I've spent the last few years. So I feel like I was a pretty successful person at a point in my life. You know, I started my company when I was 23. So I was very young. My wife and I had been married about a year earlier. She wasn't working because we were expecting our first daughter. And so the week my daughter's born in 2006, I turned to her and I said, you know what? I've been thinking about this for a few years. I want to start my own company. I want to quit my job. She has no income, right? She has no income. We're living in Toronto, which is kind of like the Manhattan or New York City of Canada. So high cost of living, really expensive to live. I'm only earning 45 grand a year. That's our household income. And I'm like, I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to quit my job and start this company. Because my pitch to her was like, we are going to make so much money. You know, if I do this for one company and earn a salary, imagine if I did this for 10 companies, we're going to make so much money. That wasn't the case. At first it took a long time, but I decided I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to start this company. I'm going to go ahead and grow this thing. And so I did not feel successful for a long time. You know, all of the hype, all of the people telling me how awesome it was that I was doing my own thing and how great it was I was striking it out on my own and how bold and courageous and how much of a risk taker I was. I didn't feel any of those things because the first year we struggled and almost went bankrupt. You know, we were living below the poverty line. The second year, the government forced us onto social assistance because they said no family can live off of this. And while I don't necessarily agree with it at the time, I was like, please help us along because we're only making, like, my first year, I made $18,000 household income. Like, this wasn't always easy. And then I, you know, by the time I'm hitting 25, I'm hitting 26, I'm hitting 27, and I'm still the lowest paid person in my company. I'm still only earning 40, 45 grand. I'd spent 5 years working to build something up, and I was only earning what I had earned 5 years earlier at someone else's company. And all of my friends who I felt ahead of now suddenly have caught up and surpassed me. And I realized that if I had worked for another company, I could have been making double or triple my money, and I would have been so much further along. At no point in that did I feel like a success. But then, when push came to shove, and I hired a great salesperson, we figured out how to sell and we figured out how to deliver. And suddenly, and over the course of like 8 months, 12 months, 16 months, we go from like barely figuring out this out to like everything snaps into place. And our sales go from like 350 to 650 to $1 million over 3 years.
Wow.
And then we got stuck at a million, but I was comfortable at a million. So at that point, 7, 8, 10 years into the business, we're growing. We're doing bigger projects because we're an agency. We're starting to move up into marketing. We start getting opportunities to do like national commercial campaigns with airlines, and they're flying us to the Caribbean. By 2017, 18, we're working with the NBA. We're doing these big things. There was a lot of status tied up and a lot of ego and a lot of personality for me, for my own, like, this is who I am, my own self-identity tied up in being the entrepreneur, the marketing guy, and the success. And frankly, we were making pretty good money. I had a really good team and I felt like a success. But at each of those breakthroughs, at each of those steps, I did get depressed. I would get depressed after Christmas, coming back to January. I would get depressed after summertime because I would take the summers off and slow down a bit. And I would enjoy the last 2 weeks with my family, and I'd go work out and I'd like do work on my backyard. And I'd dream of like not having to have a cell phone. Because every time my cell phone rang, I would look at it and go, oh, another problem. You know, I would come out of a meeting, a 2-hour meeting, and I'd have 350 emails waiting for me.
Mm.
And I was working, 12, 14 hour days. I was driving, 25,000 miles a year from client meeting to client meeting. At our peak, we had 24 full-time staff, a little over $2 million revenue. And I wasn't happy. I was getting depressed. And all of that success, right? Cool. Earning, multiple six figures. Awesome. I'm working on big projects that other people would look at and go, wow, you're working with the Toronto Raptors? Wow, I saw your commercial. I saw your commercial on the, you know, on TV. We did a commercial campaign with a government agency that got some bad press, and it literally, our commercial campaign blew up in the national press. We have national newspapers, columnists writing about it. They're going on all of the national broadcasters talking about, why would this government agency spend so much money producing this commercial? And then at the footnote would be like, it was really beautiful and it was cool that they did it. And I would like, meanwhile, I'm like, okay, well, that little footnote about how awesome the work was, I guess that's worth 9 months of my life. 9 months we committed to it. Multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars in this project. I was giving myself, like, I didn't have ulcers, but I was giving myself ulcers, you know, basically from stress and anxiety. I had panic attacks to try and deliver these projects. And is it all worth it? So that was success, right? That I'm going to paint the picture for you guys. That was what success was. And then COVID happens, and the business, you know, we lose 70% of revenue overnight, and we have to let people go, and we have to lay people off, and we have to let people quit and not rehire them. And we have to fire some clients, and we, like, our business crumbles. And I spend the next few years deciding what's next. What do I do? Can I even do this? Do I even want to do it? Do I even save the business? What do I want to do with the next, I'm turning 40, you know, next month. What do I want to do with the next 20, 30, 40 years of my life? Which is the reason why I read this book by Earl Nightingale, because I needed to redefine what success was for me. And I mean, on the other side of hitting your goal, of achieving what you worked so hard to achieve, there is this moment of like, awesome. Now what? Now what? And that now what, psychologists have actually named it. They call it, oh gosh, I wish I had the name. I was about to sound so smart, wasn't I? it's the something treadmill. But basically there's this idea that you will never, if you're standing in a field, if you're staring on a ship across the ocean, you can see the horizon, right? You can see the horizon.
Yep.
And if you try to run towards the horizon, the next horizon will always be further away. And you run to the next horizon and it's further away. And you run to the next horizon, it's further away. Those are our goals. Those are our achievements. That's quote unquote success. Every time that you achieve success, the reason you cannot celebrate it or own it is because you're already looking to the next horizon. And I've spent the last 2 or 3 years literally having to like break myself down, rewire my brain, have like, you know, like really deconstruct everything about me and choose to rebuild it in a different way to say, oh, it's the pursuit of the goal. It's the challenging, the micro challenges that you overcome. It's realizing that when you hit that goal, perfect, you hit it. Now what? It's not like I hit it. I can relax. You know, I lost a lot of weight over the last few years, and recently I've put on I put on a little weight back. So I lost 70 pounds from my heaviest to my lightest, and I'm about 20 pounds heavier than I feel like I should be. But most people lose weight by dieting. They hit their goal, they feel great, and then they put it all back on because they stop dieting. Most people build a business and they grind and grind and grind and sell and sell and sell and grow and grow and grow, burn themselves out. And then they go, I hit my goal. I made $1 million cash. I made 10 million in cash. I sold my business. Now what? It's because we look at these things as this window of time of like, I can only put so much energy in. I can only burn myself out so much. I can only diet for so long. I can only have so much willpower until I achieve it. And I get to go back to who I used to be or where I used to be or what I used to do. And then we lose it all. So a very long answer to your question, I apologize. But what I'm saying is we have to be focusing on doing the things that we do, and then we can put it to bed and move on to the next thing and embrace that, or the thing that we want to continually keep working at, keep leveling up at, keep going at, because there is no horizon. There is no final goal. There is no final destination.
Yeah. And I agree with you. I think there's a lot of people who feel I suffer now and I'm going to get my reward later, right? If I suffer now, I'm going to get my reward later. And I think that's a horrible mindset to have. I think if you're not
let's talk about that. Why? I mean, the marshmallow test, you're familiar with the marshmallow test?
Yeah,
I
am.
Delayed,
yep.
Delayed
hold off on your reward later.
Yeah. Delayed gratification is an indicator of
external success.
And so I do believe, though, that like it's like restraint is good for us. The reason I'm heavy is because I'm not restraining right now my diet. I believe moderation is good for us. I hate moderation. I'm black and white. I'm all in or I'm not all in. I get super, super obsessive, and I work my ass off at whatever's in front of me. My wife's not that way, but she turns to me and she's like, it seems to work, right? Like it seems to get your results, seems to get success. It seems to work. So I don't know if I like, I would almost disagree with you, because I think that it's a really good trait for us to have, but when is too much, I suppose.
Yeah. So if you have an end goal that you're achieving in your life, and then exactly what you said, you hit that horizon. If that was the payoff in your life and not the journey to get there, if you weren't enjoying the journey to get to that goal, then you're missing the purpose. And by all means, enjoying or embracing the suck is what I'm all about. I think the best way is through it. You know, waking up early in the morning, doing a workout, cold showers, you know, eat a live frog first thing in the morning, nothing worse will happen to you the rest of the day, all about it. But hopefully you're sick enough to start enjoying that process along the way and realize that this is what life is about. It's not always the good times, the joy, the relaxing. Sometimes it's embracing the suck and not focusing solely on that destination, but enjoying the things that you're doing right now.
So I think that there's maybe nuance to this. Let's, if you don't mind me saying, let's maybe break this out. So one, I would agree with everything you just said. So I think that there's different ways to look at the goal, at the outcome or what have you. So, you know, like I have a goal to, I started doing Spartan races because in my head, part of my identity is I want to be an athlete. I never did sports. I mean, I did hockey as a young boy and I swam, but by the time I was 10, I was pulled out of all my sports. I never did in school. I never did in high school. You know, I gained a lot of weight, so I never saw myself as athletic. And so when I started getting really fit, and then I started running more, and then I started working out a lot, and then I started lifting weights, people would say like, wow, like, you know, you're so athletic. And I work out a lot, and I can see my improvements, and I use it more so than business now to kind of prove to myself what I'm capable of and how much I can push through and all of those things. And people go like, you're athletic. And I'm like, that's great, but I want to be an athlete. I don't care if that's self-centered. I don't care if that's egotistical. Part of my identity is I've never been able to call myself that, and I wouldn't call myself that. Even when people are like, you're athletic, I've only started saying, yeah, you know, I'm in shape, right? Like I won't even own that. And so I realized a year ago, it's like, if I want to be an athlete, athletes compete. That's what I was missing. Athletes compete. And so what am I going to compete in? I got to pick something to compete in. And I actually have to compete. I can't just dabble. So I started doing these Spartan races, and I did one in Michigan. I did one just north of Detroit, you know, last summer. And I did one out here where I live on, you know, a ski hill outside of Toronto. And I was just getting into it. And the training, there was part of the training that I hated. Are we allowed to swear here?
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfect. So my personal trainer knew that I was getting ready to move from simply cutting and weightlifting to Spartans. And you need a ton of grip strength. You need a ton of upper body. You need to be able to run like hell. You need to be able to carry stuff. It's a lot of hills. So it just requires a ton of strength and core. And so he moved my workouts to like a lot more bar work, like where I would just have to hang on a pull-up bar for as long as possible. And it's like, cool. I don't know about you, but about 90 seconds into hanging on a bar, your hands and your forearms suck. I'd have to do these wall sits where I would just sit up against the wall and I would sit there for like, and I would look at the clock and I'd be like, 1:50, 2 minutes, 2:05. And every second it's just becoming more and more and more painful. And I could do it, but he gave me this workout that he called fuckery. And it was almost like he was like, Mark, this is what you need to do to train. And I hated this workout. I had to do it every Thursday leading up to Spartan Trek. I hated it. It was a HIIT workout where it was like 30 seconds of bare crawls right into burpees, right into 30 second sprint, and then 15 second rest. And then just do that like over and over and over again. and then do like army crawls and then do like pop jacks. And it was just like, just trying to get core strength, everything working for me. And I hated it. And so when I did my Spartan race, I showed up and I was like, first of all, I did way better than I thought I was going to do. I'm hitting monkey bars and I'm like, this is so easy. I'm like, wow, training works. Like, I did not think I was going to do this well. But when I came back from it, I was like, one, I want to be an athlete. I want to compete. I want to get competitive at Spartan. And I've only done one. But I turned to Neil, my personal trainer. I said, Neil, I hate this workout. Like, I'm going to be honest with you. If for me to become a Spartan is to have to do this three times a week, I'm not going to do it. Like, I hate this so much. I could do it if you need me to, but I'm not going to enjoy it. And I can tell you, I'm going to start cheating. I'm going to start cutting. I'm not going to work as hard. I'm going to hate it. I hate it. I hate it. And he's like, oh, that's not good. Let's change that up. But so I identified, I want to be an athlete. I want to compete. I want to be a Spartan. After I ran my first two Spartans and I wasn't in a competitive zone, I was just literally running it. The first time I did, I think an hour 44, I was pretty happy with the 10K, run at that. The second one I did much quicker in Michigan. It was a much easier race. I think I did in 130. I looked at the competitive people and I said, I want to hit a top 10 finish. I want to get a top 10 finish. Now, what does that require of me? I need to figure out how to shave at least 30 minutes off of my run, off of my run and my Spartan, my 10K. I'm coming in at an hour 44 or an hour 35. They're coming in, the 10th place person is coming in 30 minutes quicker than me. So I got to figure out how to shave like 30 or 40% off.
That's a hell of a feat. And how old are you when you're doing this?
I'm 39, so I'm turning 40.
Wow.
Now a few things. One, I never exercised, so I saved my knees all through my 20s.
There you go.
but so I have this goal. Here's where I'm going. Early, this is what I'm arguing about, where we got to classify things. One.
Yeah.
Okay. I set this goal. I set this goal to get a top 10. I am not ready. I'm not physically ready to get a top 10. I am not even emotionally ready to commit to what it will take to get there. I don't even know what it will take to get there. I follow people on Instagram and I watch what they're doing. And when I'm at Michigan, you know, at the last race, you know, the really fit people who finished up quick, I was watching what they're doing and how fast they ran. I was looking at their body makeup. I was looking at their percentage body fat, what they focused on. I can get a coach. I know that I can figure out the mechanics. I don't know if I have it within me to do it. But if I didn't pick the goal, that audacious, frankly, completely crazy goal, like a top 10 finish for a Spartan race and figuring out how to do this, one, if I didn't pick that crazy goal, I wouldn't start asking myself the questions I need to ask to even put together a plan. I wouldn't start moving in that direction. I wouldn't have this draw. I wouldn't have this pull. And so we need that really clear goal. We need it. And if every workout for the next 3 years, let's say it's going to take me 3 years to get there, it might, was a fuckery workout that I hated, I wouldn't do it. So you have to want the goal and you have to enjoy the journey. But where am I going with this? But at a certain point, it's got to flip from fun to, like, at a certain point, if I want a top 10 finish, I'm going to have to cut and be hungry a lot. I'm going to have to start running 20 and 30 Ks without my knees hurting and pushing through that. I'm going to have to figure out how to drop my percentage body fat a lot because I'm such a heavy, like I'm built like a heavy guy. And
yeah,
this is,
it's
going to
be painful.
Race.
Absolutely.
I'm going to, leading up to these races, if I want to be competitive, I'm going to have to start doing fuckery workouts again. I'm going to have to. But if every workout to get there was that, I'm not going to do it. If I'm close enough, if I enjoy the process and I'm close enough to the goal to embrace that short-term thing, it's great. And this is why I would never make a blanket statement that it's like, you have to love the journey. You do, until a point. You can't hate the whole thing. You have to enjoy it. You have to love it. It has to motivate you. But you also have to have a goal that challenges you and a goal that inspires you and a goal that almost seems a bit audacious because it's going to have you ask the right questions to become the person who can achieve that. It has to be a goal that's so big that even if I don't get a top 10 finish, but I get a top 15, even if I don't shave 30 minutes off my time, I shave 15 or 20 minutes. I'm still way more of a badass shaving 20 minutes off of my time than hitting that. And so, you know, it's just, there's no blanket statement here. Have the big goal. Make sure that you're working towards it and giving yourself enough time to do it. Make sure that you love parts of the process and make sure you're ready to embrace the parts you don't like in pursuit of that goal. And then I can tell you, imagine the day that I get that top 10 finish. Imagine it, right? Imagine me showing up and going, oh, the last time I missed it by this much time. 3 times ago, this happened. Like, I'm going to have done it time and time again. I'm not going to just get out there and suddenly get a top 10 finish. I'm going to have to do these things. I'm going to have to work towards this. I'm going to have to achieve that goal. But there's going to be that day where things align. You know, I had Zach Bitter on my podcast. I don't know if you know Zach Bitter. He held 2 world records for the fastest 100 miles ever run. He ran it in 11 hours and something minutes. He also held a world record for the longest distance run in 12 hours.
Hmm.
When I had him on my podcast, I said, when did this idea happen for you? 7 years before he broke the world record. Because he could only ever have one attempt per year. It took so much training for him to get into peak performance for that day. And then coming out of that training, he had to unwind. He had to relax. He had to let his body go for 3 months and then take 3 months of neutrality to get back to 6 months of training. So the reason it took him 7 years to achieve that goal was because the first year he messed up on his body, something messed up. The second year, the altitude of where they were running didn't agree with him. The third year, he got really sick. The fourth year, it looked like it was going to come together, but he missed it at the end. And I was like, dude, you spent 7 years trying to hit this goal. So when he hit it, I'm sure it felt great.
Yeah.
Right. When I hit my top 10 finish at Spartan, there's going to be a moment where every step along that way, I'm like, this is for the top 10. This is for the top 10. I've worked too hard. You can't take this away from me. Mark, don't let yourself down. Push, push, push. This sucks. And I'm going to get it. And I'm going to feel proud as hell. I'm going to have surprised myself. I can tell you I'm going to be crying because I'm going to just feel so amazing. And then I will have done it. Now, I could get really depressed, or I could just say, what's next? What's next? Is it a second top 10 finish? Does that help me? Do I move to a beast? Do I try to do a marathon? Do I go to a triathlon? Do I move away from physical stuff and focus maybe on becoming a better speaker or putting myself in front of audiences or being a better husband? Like, what's next? But, yeah, I mean, I don't know what you make of all that.
Yeah, no, it's great. I'd like to talk a little bit about your podcast, We Do the Hard Things. Can you talk a little bit about the inspiration behind that podcast?
Yeah, We Do Hard Things. We connect with what I believe is the world's greatest business minds, thought leaders, athletes, creatives. And essentially, I believe the hardest thing you can do is bet on yourself. We see this time and again. People marry people who are in front of them, but not necessarily the right people because they're in front of them. They take jobs that they don't really like. They pick schools that they have no interest in going to. They start businesses that seem like a great time. And then when they become really hard, they're not really committed. They were just dabbling or more interested. And so often we take the safe way out. We allow fear and doubt and uncertainty, a lack of belief in ourselves. Many of us just simply do not realize how much we can grow, how much further we can go, the skills we can develop over time. We just don't even understand it. And so We Do Hard Things is for people who bet on themselves. It's a podcast where I want more people to bet on themselves. I want more people to realize that life is very, very long. It's too short to waste, but it's very, very long. And so the work that you're doing today is a gift for the future. And so, we connect with some really badass people who have done some really badass things, mostly so that way they can inspire me.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know about you, but
challenging limiting beliefs and human potential, all that stuff.
Yeah. And whether you're a creative, you know, like people love to tear down Taylor Swift. I would like to see anyone carry the weight of responsibility that she carries on her shoulders for even a few minutes and see if they don't make a mistake here or there. You know, like, so whether you're a creative, whether you're an athlete, whether you're a business mind, I think the greatest thing you can do is bet on yourself. And I just respect the hell out of people who do.
Yeah, that's awesome. I couldn't agree with you more on that. Well, thank you so much, Mark, for everyone listening. How do they follow you? How do they keep in touch with what you got going on?
Well, if you want to connect with me one-on-one, head over to Instagram, drop me a DM. My handle is at Mark Draeger. I'd love to connect with you. There's no bots. There's no funnels. There's none of that stuff. It's just me. And if you want to check out the podcast, head over to YouTube. You can look up my name, Mark Draeger, or We Do Hard Things. And of course, it's on all of your regular audio listening apps.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for listening to this episode of the Success Is Podcast.